Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's the big show in the morning. Sportsnet 960 The Fan on your Monday. Hope you're having a great day and hope you had a lovely weekend as we sit here on September the 19th. Lots happened over the course of the weekend. There were players in Flames jerseys skating around playing actual games of hockey, with another one scheduled for today. The Jays taking on the Orioles, a chance to effectively end the season of the Baltimore Orioles, at least their chase for the Blue Jays. Week 14 in the CFL. And week 2 in the NFL. And the PGA season started. So a lot to get to. How was your weekend, my guy? What did you do?
It was good.
Saturday, we hung out at the Stamps game, and we'll dive into that.
We were at the Stamps game Saturday, and Friday, I went to Donnamac over there on, 10th or 11th for dinner. Had a lovely pasta. Was out with a friend who was not drinking this month, so figured I would give him something social to do that didn't involve drinking. So
did you have a soda pop?
I did.
You have like a craft soda pop?
They had craft. I had a
cream soda,
ginger ale, and a root beer. They were both very lovely. Was home by 11. Woke up, went to Crossfield Market. Went to
the new one.
Yeah, went to the gym on Saturday. I bought this sick pink Stussy sweater that I'm wearing right now.
It's pretty sick.
And then off to the Stampeders, and that happened. That was, as I'm sure we'll get into, that was a pretty eventful game that's going to give us lots to talk about.
Well, the game wasn't eventful. The game was borderline unwatchable.
I think it depends on your definition of eventful. If you like referees throwing flags on every play, it was certainly eventful. Those qualify as an event.
They got to have sore backs, hey? Man, like, it's a lot
terrible.
Of bending over to pick things up.
It was one of the most frustrating games of football I've ever seen, followed by followed by a punch, followed by a fair bit of chaos post-game.
Nonsense.
Which we're going to, I'm sure, talk about.
Yeah.
It was sort of interesting how big a deal it felt, followed by watching the NFL yesterday and being like, oh, players fight in football. Like, it's like,
yeah,
it happens sometimes, but we'll get into it. But, last night, watched. I finally got caught up with the Rings of Power show. I enjoyed that. Was in bed early, and that's that. So I don't know. Pretty good weekend.
This is where you and I are on opposite wavelengths, because you're rocking Rings of Power right now, and I caught up with the latest episode of Game of Thrones yesterday with House of the Dragon.
I will do. It's just that show's boring, man.
But it's not though. It's not that boring. The last episode was good. I will say that some of the writing this year, I felt like it has brought in like some kind of old like sitcom-y type of tropes while also doing it very Game of Thrones style. Like, I thought week 4 was a classic, the kids got a little bit too lit and now we've got to figure out what happens next. And then this was a classic whodunit, you know, the old sitcom trope where you've got three characters, and they're all involved in their own story.
I know what a whodunit is.
But a whodunit isn't the proper term. Like, when there's a misconception between two parties, and someone confesses to something but doesn't say the act that they're confessing to, and the other party is asking them about something else, so they think they're confessing to something different, and it sets off a series of events, because everyone thinks... You know, it's one of those classic sitcom-y type
of
things.
My issue with this show compared to the original Game of Thrones, and I don't want to get too, film critic-y here. The first show, it was like, all right, there were people from all over Westeros you were following, You kind of understood. Yeah, it was the big houses, but it wasn't just the rich people. You know, you're on the wall, you were across the sea.
There was like 14 different storylines on the go. You'd go weeks without seeing a character.
This one's just like, hey, here's... five characters from those powerful family in Westeros as they kind of deal with their familial issues. And I don't know, man. Like, it doesn't have the same scope. It's just the same characters.
More dragons, though. But I completely understand what you mean. Like, and I think it's one of the beauties of, honestly, a lot of the shows that HBO does. Like, even Euphoria. Like, you go and you watch that, and every single character kind of has their own thing going on. Like, in the end, they usually find a way to tie it all together.
There's multiple storylines playing out at the same time.
Yeah, it's kind of the beauty of the writing to HBO, and it's why a lot of their shows are so popular, because they have all these storylines, and no matter what your taste is in film, you usually can find one or two that you kind of latch on to. But with this, you're very right. Like, it's the Targaryens, maybe the Valyrians, and you're kind of seeing a couple of other names in there that are coming up, but they don't have nearly the same relevance.
And Rings of Power, you're mm-hmm. getting that. I mean, I understand about 15% of what's happening, but at least there's a lot that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it looks really cool. You know, to be honest, they sing a lot. I don't know. I just like.
Is there musical numbers in it?
It's not really. It's more like elves sing or dwarves sing. Like it'll just
for full scenes.
No, I'm exaggerating. Let's be honest here. But last night there was one episode. There was one thing where they sang, and I was like, I don't need this. I don't need this. I don't need dwarves singing in a cave. But it happened. I don't know. It's more just like there's just more going on, and it looks beautiful, to be honest with you. Like, not to be too serious, but like Jeff Bezos has so much money and he is spending it on this show. It's very sick.
I had heard that the future of Amazon's, or I'd read, not heard, like I got some inside sources in the film industry.
Bezos texted you?
Yeah, he hit me up on a DM.
I don't even know if it's Bezos or Bezos.
I think it's Bezos.
Well, we're going to say Bezos.
We can say both.
That's the direction we're taking this.
I'm sure that he pays someone to correct us, so they should be around to tell us what's right.
We're
going to
see some assist by the end of the first segment.
Something like that. But I had read that this was kind of like, if this show flops, they're just going to basically say whatever to their streaming full tilt. But it sounds like it's not flopping. It sounds like it's doing quite well.
That would be really hard for them to only be able to make billions of dollars a year on selling stuff and not be able to make TV. I mean, that's a tough break.
Yeah, but I think the idea was like, we're going to literally pull out all the stops. Like, we're going to do everything we possibly can. And if this show isn't a gigantic hit, then what's the point in what we're doing? And I think it's a little bit extreme of a take, but that's kind of the idea that I had read. But also, I think that when I read it, I was like, well, you also put in like a ridiculous amount of money, and as long as you didn't get a couple of apes to edit this thing together, you're probably going to have a product based on just the money alone that is going to be pretty good.
Well, and I don't know how you measure the success of any of these things. Like, I'm watching the show, and I really like it, but like, it's not, I mean, I'm paying for Prime anyways, so how many people are adding Prime as a service? How much more money are they making based on the show? I have no idea. I mean, now we're just getting into the economics of streaming, which, let's be honest, me and you are deeply unqualified to do.
I would agree. Can I tell you about my watch party?
Tell me about your watch party.
So Friday, Flames, Young Stars out in Penticton. The Flames lost both their games, 3-0 to the Canucks on Friday, and then 4-1 to the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday. I was having some friends over just for dinner and stuff like that, but I had told Danny that I'm going to put the Young Stars game on. So it took on the life of its own as being a watch party. And sure enough, we got to about midway through the first period. It was scoreless, and the Democratic group took over, and we played Jackbox for the rest of the evening.
It sounds like a better night. With respect, and again, any joke that I make here, I think it's great that they're making this available for fans.
Yes.
Like, I legitimately think it's awesome, and if you have fun watching the Young Stars, I totally get that and, like, do appreciate it. But
they play again at noon today.
Get on it. If I went over to someone's house on a Friday night and they invited me over for dinner and then forced me to watch not only a preseason, but like a pre-preseason
mm-hmm.
hockey game, I'd be disappointed in them as a friend. I would feel like they let me down and betrayed me just a little bit.
But what if I told them in the start, I was like, hey, by the way, I'm probably going to put the Young Stars game on.
I would be like, how about that Jackbox game, man?
Yeah.
It sounds like you had a great night. See, like you had a lovely evening.
Yeah. But I will say, if the game had been better, like even slightly, At one point, one of my friends, who does not play a ton of hockey, but has came to watch me and another friend's beer league games before, looked over at me and he said, "I'd rather watch you two idiots play beer league than this." Which and I went, "Okay, we can probably take some ideas from the crowd here. We can probably canvas for a couple of thoughts on something else to put up on the tube." And then it was Jackbox pretty quick.
I mean, that says a lot, because I have a hard rule that I will not go watch my friends play intramural sports. It's not happening. I honestly, the number
he hasn't done it for years. Did it once or twice.
Good on him. That's being a better friend than I am. This is not, I'm not saying everyone should have this rule. I don't want people saying that, but like, no, I know how entertaining you find your slow pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Your boy is not coming out to watch you play slow pitch.
No.
Within like the total realm of what is entertaining and what is not, you playing your intramural sport, I don't want to watch.
No.
I'll do it if it's a girlfriend and I want to be supportive.
Sure.
But not a friend. So if it was worse than that, I don't want to be bad-mouthing the Young Start. I think it's so awesome that the Flames are making it available. But it sounds like your watch party went the way that it was always going to go.
Listen, it's the first game of the season for these guys. It's going to look awful. And it did for a lot of it. There were things that stood out. Zary looked good. This Adam Klapka guy is getting a lot of love, being 6'8" and... Well, just that in general is pretty much endearing to the fan base. But then you show a little bit of silky mitts. There was a toe drag highlight that was floating around on Twitter. He got in a fight and basically one-punched one of the Oilers, which...
Big weekend for one-punching.
You know, big weekend for one-punching. Adam Klapka, I think, is one of the guys that has... caught some eyes. Dustin Wolf played in both games. Very solid the first game. Pretty good in the second game. I think Peltier and Zary stood out. Schwint got in a little bit of rough
Dunk,
stuff.
I'm not wrong that it would seem like goaltending is a job that's going to take a training camp to be sharp, right? Like it's a job. You're not expecting guys to come in and be great on day one, are you?
The goaltenders?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really think you can. I think it would be hard to lean one way or the other, because you know, you go long enough without playing and you get bricks for hands. It's the same way with anything. It's the same thing with golf. I find it the same. Like if I play video games for like 2 weeks, then I don't play for 2 weeks, I feel like I'm new again.
Yeah, and I feel like to be fair,
like you take the whole off season off, you got to basically
And it does seem like in 2022, like 15 years ago, guys were coming in and, you know, you worked into shape through training camp, and that's certainly not the case. I don't know. It seems like goaltending is one of those ones where getting reps in, you know, playing at that speed with guys, which I don't think you can necessarily replicate during the offseason. It just seems like it would be something where, you know, I'd expect a guy with 3 weeks of working with the team to be better than without, but that doesn't.
Yeah, to be a bit sloppy, but I think the other aspect there is very much just like, the players look sloppy. Like, they're not moving fast. The passes aren't crisp. The shots aren't great. Everything's getting bobbled.
Part of this tournament is similar to rookie camp when the Stampeders happened, is to give the young guys a jump.
Honestly, for Wolf, this is just reps ahead of preseason. I was surprised he started both. I thought maybe you give one of the other prospect, Chechelev, one of the games, but... maybe he goes today against the Winnipeg Jets prospects. That'll be at noon. We'll actually have that one right here for you on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Blair and Barker is going to be on the show, on the station today. Eric Francis coming up at 3 o'clock. Flames Talk with Steinberg and Logan Gordon going to go at 4. Pat will give you all of his thoughts as he was dialed to these two games over the weekend. I'm probably going to keep a pretty close eye on this game against Winnipeg as well today. That's probably going to be it for me.
I know we've got Jamie Thomas on. I assume we're going to ask him a little bit about anyone to watch on the Jets side.
Yeah, so the point of that was to talk about the game, and then also Mark Scheifele or Blake Wheeler got stripped of the captaincy.
Oh, yeah. If you're on Twitter and follow anyone in sports in Canada, you definitely are aware of what's happening.
So there's actually a lot of stuff to go on with the big boy Jets, but we'll also get maybe a thought or two as to who we should keep our eyes on for the other side. But this is also the time of year where I'm like, I'm just trying to almost figure out some of the Flames numbers. Like, I know Zary's 47. Peltier was 49 last year. Wolf is the goalie. I think Poirier's wearing 72 from just watching a little bit of power play time. But apart from that, just trying to get to know the guy now. Numbers, body shapes, and all that jazz. Did you watch any of the NFL yesterday, Danny?
I watched bits and pieces. Yeah. I mean, I have to do, as you know, working my actual job for the Calgary Sun and Herald. I have a pretty major, you know, it's the big piece of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Comes out the day after the game. So by the time I was sort of
done
that. I mean, I had it on. I'm not allowed to say what streaming service I watch my games on, but, you know, I had it on throughout, but you do got to focus in, especially after a pretty controversial ending to that game. So I had to be pretty litigious with what I wrote. But yeah, I caught the nice thing was all you really had to do was catch the fourth quarter of about five of those games, and you'd see historic comebacks and some pretty dramatic stuff. I mean, that, again, I've mentioned this, but all of my friends from back home are Jets fans, mm-hmm. inexplicably. So, you know, the group chat was pretty excited by Joe Flacco turning it on and that comeback. And to be honest, I mean, I know we got the morning report. We'll touch on all of it, but nice to see Tua just kind of take over after everyone's been questioning him for the last couple of years. Got to say that. I'm not a Dolphins fan, but that was cool to see.
Boy, did that game not disappoint. I think it had the highest total of the week. It was at 54.5, and they almost both got them there by themselves.
Yeah, dude threw for 469 and 6 touchdowns. I mean, I have that as a note here. I don't know. I to be honest, I was a pretty big Tua fan, and I do not like Alabama, but I think he was a cool story in college. So, you know, seeing him after that hip injury sort of struggle and the national media say he didn't have it, seeing a guy like that just step up in that big way now that he's got the receivers was kind of amazing.
I'm quirky in the sense that I'm like, yeah, I love that he's left-handed. How weird.
It looks so weird.
It looks so whack. Like, I'm like, why do they have the TV? Why do they have the cameras on the wrong side of the field? This doesn't make sense. We want a stat on the Browns. How about this? The Browns blew a 13-point lead in the final minute and 22 to lose to the Jets 31-30. NFL teams had won the last 2,229 consecutive games when leading by at least 13 points in the final 2 minutes. The last team to blow such a lead? The Browns. In week 9 of the 2001 season against the Bears.
I mean, we're all rooting against
Browns
this year.
When you do it to an elite quarterback like Tom Brady or Pat Mahomes or Justin Herbert or Joe Flacco, you just got to tip your hat.
I mean, they said 99.9% the Browns had the, with like a minute and a half to go.
Amazon win outcome thing that they do.
Yeah.
Analytic darlings.
Which, like, I never know what that means. Like, what's the difference between 75 and 83%?
Yeah. I'm like, show your work.
But
show your work.
When you say 99.9%, I understand what 99.9% means.
A lot.
Even this writer for a living understands what that means.
Even the simple scribe can put a little bit of math together.
So yeah, no, it felt like you know, that was a pretty decent Sunday slate.
And now we get a doubleheader Monday.
Yeah,
pick your poison. What do you want?
The soon to be Super Bowl champion Buffalo Bills.
Soon to be, it's week 2. Like, I understand if you think, like, they're going to be...
Give me the math on that.
It's, like, 4 months away. That's the math. Soon to be. Like, I think that you could argue that, yes, they are in a position where they perhaps could do some damage this year, but a timeline just doesn't make sense.
I live a life of absolutes, Matt. I know right and wrong. I'm declaring the Bills Super Bowl champions.
Okay.
Even though I'm absolutely not... Don't believe that.
That but ahead of their week
for
2
the sake
matchup
of good radio.
With the Tennessee Titans. They get going at 5:15 tonight. The other game is Minnesota visiting the Philadelphia Eagles. That one will go at 6:30. So,
do you want me to declaratively state where Minnesota or the Eagles are going to finish at the end of the season?
Yeah, I would love if you tell me definitively where they will finish in each of their respective divisions.
You know, 45 seconds ago, you were telling me I wasn't allowed to do that. So I'm going to follow your advice and and not go that direction.
Okay. Wow. Back and forth we go. Listen, like you mentioned, we got the morning report coming up. We got to talk a little bit about this brouhaha at McMahon Stadium and a weekend that was for the Jays, the Young Stars, so much more. So we'll take a quick break. The morning report coming at you next. You're listening to The Big Show. Keep it locked. We'll be here till 9 a.m. and then it'll be Blair and Barker. But stick around. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Let's dive in. It's time for the morning report brought to you by Motorworks. Exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors. Quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast.
Marty Rose.
Matt Rose.
Matt Rose. I'm Matt Rose. He's Danny Austin. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Matt.
And we got Alex Brody in the other room, and we're diving into the morning report because the Flames and the rest of Western Canada's Young Stars wrapped up the Young Guns tournament down in Penticton. Well, it'll wrap up later today. A couple of games over the course of the weekend for the Flames. The Prospects dropped both their games over the weekend, 3-0 against the Canucks Prospects Friday, a 4-1 loss to the Oilers Prospects on Saturday. They are exhibition games. What do you take from them? It's probably only small bits. Jack Beck, the 2021 sixth-round pick, scored the only goal of the weekend for Calgary. Adam Klapka stood out in both games with his physicality and a surprising amount of skill for someone who's 6'8". Dustin Wolf got the start in both games. He was pretty strong. Schwint, Zeri, Peltier also getting strong reviews from their first couple of games. Calgary and the Winnipeg Prospects will close it out later today. They're going to battle at noon Calgary time. We'll have it on Sportsnet 960, or you can watch the stream on the Flames website. Jamie Thomas going to join us just after 8:30 to talk a little bit about the Jets, because over the weekend, they also stripped Blake Wheeler of his captaincy. So we'll dive into that over the course of the weekend, or over the course of the show, as that broke over on Friday. That's going to be an interesting thing to dive into. They're going to go with a group of assistants in Winnipeg this season, Danny.
Which, like, from an outsider perspective, this was always coming. Like, it, you know, it seemed like there was a bit of a leadership issue. I mean, I think we all expected more change in Winnipeg over the offseason.
I think some people thought he was going to get dealt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got a big contract.
Hard contract to deal. I think some people thought they were going to try to deal him, but I don't know anyone who would be, like, licking their chops to bring that one in.
This is one of those ones that I think that, you know, when you follow the team or are on the team or whatever, might feel like a, you know, an explosion of news. Well, from an outsider, to be honest, I was surprised that he was still captain.
that's very fair. Now I think the real question is, well, does he even get an A?
They've got to give him an A.
They
right?
have to, right?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty salty. But
just that one, I mean, it's tough for any one person to comment on it. But when we asked Jamie, I mean, it does just seem like all we hear is that there's something sort of twisted there. In that Winnipeg locker room.
Yeah, and it's the hardest thing to...
And Rick Bowness seems like the nicest man alive. Like, he seems like the last gentleman in the country.
Well, and so, for him to just be even at this point, not even through training camp, and be like, oh, yeah, no, definitely not. Not you, that's for sure.
Says something.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Week 2 of the NFL concludes this evening. But we'll start with the early set of games from yesterday. How about this? Had one of the lowest totals set for the week. But the Browns and Jets ran the score up. They went back and forth all game. The Jets actually recovered an onside kick with a minute and 22 seconds on the clock. Joe Flacco would lead them on a 9-play drive, ending in a touchdown strike to Garrett Wilson as the Jets win 31-30. But if you were a Nick Chubb fantasy owner, probably happy. 3 touchdowns for him in that loss. That's a tough one for Cleveland. They're still trying to figure things out. Is Jacoby Brissett, is it quarterback for them? Dan Campbell and his Lions.
I think he's kind of a hybrid of a hybrid.
They were taking on the Commanders. Detroit opened up a 22-0 lead in the first half and never looked back. Carson Wentz did throw 3 touchdowns in the second half of the game, and Antonio Gibson ran in another, but the Lions were still able to win 36-27. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the stud receiver for the Lions, 9 grabs, 116 yards, 2 touchdowns, and also added another 2 rushes for 68 yards. A stud receiver for the Lions, no doubt. Buccaneers and Saints, this was a slog, especially in the first half. Tom Brady was yelling at the referees. He was slamming iPads. He was yelling at his players. The Saints and the Buccaneers were pushing cameramen. There were ejections on both sides for some punches that were thrown. In the end, 3-3 to end the first half. Then the Buccaneers got just enough offense in the fourth quarter to leave with a win. Breshad Perriman took a 28-yard touchdown pass from Tom Brady. Succop hit a long field goal, and then Mike Edwards ran back a 68-yard pick six, picking off Jameis Winston as the Buccaneers took a 20-10 victory. Giants and the Panthers also just a snoozer in the first half. Four field goals for a 6-6 tie after 30 minutes of play. Graham Gano would eventually kick a 19-yard field goal as the Giants beat the Panthers 19-16. If you like punts, Danny, I hope you set your PVR.
Are the Giants good?
I don't think so.
2-0, they got the Bears, and or they got the Cowboys next week. The Bears, October 2nd. They could be 4-0.
Are they good, though? I think Saquon Barkley is playing the best he has been playing in quite some time. But, you know, it's a bunch of kind of underperforming receivers as they have been for a long time in their career. Kenny Golladay was great with the Lions, has been awful since he signed a big contract with the Giants. Sterling Shepard is constantly hurt but has shown flashes.
Are they good enough to make the playoffs if they, let's assume that they beat the Cowboys and Bears? Those are two winnable games. If I tell you they are 4-0 on October 3rd, 2022, it's hard not to make the playoffs when you start 4-0.
Yeah.
It might be some nice scheduling for them to start. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm looking at them right now and I'm impressed. I like where this Giants team is at. I'm not calling them a contender.
Are you calling them a Super Bowl champion 4 months before the Super Bowl?
That's the Buffalo Bills.
But you're like in your division, you got the Commanders, the Eagles, and the Cowboys. And the Cowboys scraped that one out against the Bengals. I think the Eagles should probably be good. We'll see what happens tonight. And then the Commanders, up and down so far. I'm talking myself into it, but I would have laughed you off at the start of the conversation.
I mean, they've got literally their next six games are Cowboys, Bears. Those are very winnable. Sure. Packers, they're going to lose. Ravens, who I, to be honest, think that they probably lose to. And then they got the Jags, who are pretty unconvincing, and the Seahawks. So it's possible that they're 6-2.
Very possible. Patriots and Steelers, no TJ Watt for the Steelers, and that certainly helped Mac Jones of the Patriots. They relied on their own defense, recovered a muff punt, ended up in points to take a 17-14 win over the Steelers. Down in Jacksonville, the Jags shutting out the Colts in the first half, 24-0. They pushed their home win streak over their divisional rival to 8 straight games. Is Trevor Lawrence for real? 25-30, 235 yards, no TDs? Well, Matt Ryan threw 3 picks and Jonathan Taylor, his fantasy owners pulling their hair out. Woof. My goodness. It's still exciting down in Jacksonville, though. Dolphins and Ravens. This was the game of the first set for sure. Back and forth, Lamar Jackson. The Ravens open up a 28-7 lead on the Fins in the first half, helped by Devin Duvernay returning the opening kickoff 103 yards for a touchdown. And then 3 TD passes from Lamar Jackson, but the defense did not hold up their side of the bargain against Tua. 5 touchdown passes in the second half. 2 of them bombs to Tyreek Hill to take a 42-38 win. 4 touchdowns in the fourth quarter alone for Tua. 36 for 50, 469 yards passing, 6 scores and 2 picks. Lamar Jackson says he can't let that one get away.
Just got to finish. Came down to the fourth quarter. They were putting points on the board. We wasn't. Put 3 points on the board probably fourth quarter. But we got to just finish.
Rams and Falcons battled in the second set of games. The Falcons were a heavy underdog in this one. They wouldn't get the win, but they would at least manage to cover the spread with a sneaky backdoor cover. Rams led 28-10 after 3 quarters. They held on to win 31-27. A better game for Allen Robinson, the offseason acquisition for the Rams, his first touchdown and 53 yards on 4 of 5 targets. Seahawks and 49ers, the Hawks with a big win over Russ and the Broncos in week 1. Big shocking loss for the 49ers in this one, as young stud quarterback Trey Lance went down with a broken ankle on the second drive of the game. He had to be carted off. He'll have surgery done for the year. Jimmy Garoppolo came into the contest, threw a touchdown, ran in another, all helping the 49ers win 27-7.
Do you know how many podcasts I listened to that just ripped on them for not trading Jimmy? this offseason. And now, I mean, this is why, honestly, it makes me laugh every time as the Stampeders reporter, someone asks me if they're going to trade Bo. And it's like, no.
No.
If you have a guy who can win you games as your backup, you keep him.
Without a doubt, especially when you look at some of the things going on around the league and you're like, oh, but they got Vernon. Yeah, what did they have to pay to get Vernon? It's a pretty big cost. Elsewhere, the hapless Bengals taking on the Dallas Cowboys. The Bengals offensive line, it's not better. It's worse. One of the game's young quarterbacks could spend the year running for his life. The Cowboys spoiling anything on offense for the Bengals. They stacked Joe Burrow 6 times. Dallas led 17-3 at the half. The Bengals pushed in the second half. The Cowboys persevered. Brett Maher hit a 50-yard field goal as time ran out to give the Cowboys their first win. 20-17 the final. Well, the Bengals moved to 0-2. Head coach Zach Taylor, not concerned, though.
Every team in the league is going to go through this, where you face a two-game losing streak at some point. Unfortunately for us, it's the first 2 games of the season. It's a long season. And so, again, we just got to kind of hit the reset button. Not in a negative way, but just regroup for Tuesday to get ready for the Jets this Sunday.
Texans and Browns. Russ Wilson and the Broncos headed into Cleveland to battle the Browns. Sloppy game. 1 touchdown. Russ Wilson to Eric Sobert for a 22-yard strike. Cortland Sutton with a strong game for Denver, though. 122 yards on 7 grabs and 11 targets. As the Browns end up taking this one. A big victory for Cleveland. Pardon me.
I think we got that one a little bit.
What am I talking about here? Texans and Browns. Russ Wilson and the Broncos.
I think you mean Broncos, not Browns.
What is... This is terribly written.
You do mean Broncos, not Browns?
The Denver Broncos beat the Houston Texans 16-9. Let's move on. The Cardinals were taking on the Raiders. Both teams take a loss in week one and needed to get something going in the right direction. Vegas shut out the Cardinals 20-0 in the first half, but couldn't hold on to the win. They only scored 3 points to the Cardinals, 23 in the second half. So we had some overtime. This one with a wild ending.
Carr waiting for the shotgun snap. He's got the ball. Quick throw left side. Renfro with a catch. And he breaks one tackle. Then the ball comes out. It's loose. And it's picked up by the Cardinals in midfield. It's picked up by Byron Murphy at the 40, at the 30, at the 20, at the 10. Full game. Byron Murphy picks up the ball at midfield. Returns it for a touchdown. And the Cardinals win.
The old scoop and score for Byron Murphy and the Cards defense. They take a 29-23 win over the Raiders, who have now moved to 0-2. And finally, your Sunday nighter had the Packers taking on the Bears. The Aaron Jones show as the Packers running back scored 2 times en route to a 27-10 pounding by Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. The Bears only passed the ball 11 times. Justin Fields completed 7 of his 11 passes for 0 touchdowns and a pick. Monday Night Football. Wraps week 2 with a couple of games. The Titans and Bills will go at 5:15, and the Vikings and the Eagles will battle at 6:30. Switch over to the Diamonds.
There's no crying in baseball!
Jays and Orioles in a weekend set. The Jays winning on Friday and Saturday by 6-3 scores. George Springer hit a 3-run shot. Matt Chapman with a couple home runs helping for Friday's win. A bases-clearing double for Raimel Tapia highlighted Saturday. It was a bullpen win on Friday, followed by a Jose Barrios victory on Saturday, leading into Sunday and a chance at a sweep with Alec Manoah on the bump for the Jays, and he got some run support early.
The pitch. Bichette swings and drives it to left field, a base hit. Springer gets the wave around third. The throw to the plate, offline. Blue Jays in front, 1-0.
So the Jays are on the board first, 2 runners still on base with no outs, and then this.
Still nobody out. The first pitch to Chapman. Line to short. Mateo flips to second for 1. Back over to first. That's a triple play. Wow. Matt Chapman lined it to Mateo. Vladdy was off second, so he threw it over to second for the double play. They threw it over to first with Bo off the bag for a triple play.
A triple play. Whew. The Orioles would actually tie the game in the ensuing inning, but then Danny Jansen would homer to restore the Jays lead 2-1. That lead extended in inning number 7.
The 1-1. Slider poked to deep left field. Hayes going back. He's at the wall. That ball is gone. Number 27 hits his 29th of the year.
A solo bomb to make it 3-1. Things to be in pretty good shape as well. They head into the ninth with a lead. Jordan Romano coming out for the save. He's been getting better and better as the season has gone on. He's becoming one of the elite closers, but yesterday...
The 0-1. Ground ball, left side, into left field, a base hit. Stowers scores, we're tied. Coming home is Urias. He will score. The throw goes into third, and Rushman gives the Orioles the lead. 0-1, poke to right field. This will score another run as it gets down. In to score, Mullins. Around to third is Henderson, and he is out. Throw came in. Henderson initially safe, but he came off the bag. Baltimore's run will count.
That is a run across the Orioles in the ninth rally. They go up. No Mary Brown's chicken for Jordan Romano. Springer would knock in a run in the ninth, but the Jays do lose it 5-4. They take 2 of 3 against their divisional rivals, putting 6 games between them in the standings with only 15 games left in the regular season, which should be enough. Manager John Schneider said this about the entire series as a whole.
Entire series was awesome. I thought we played great. I think it speaks volumes to what we did in the ninth inning against a really good reliever. And, you know, it just shows the mentality of this team. You know, I think defense was good again, and at-bats were good up and down. It's a tight game. And, you know, the fact that we got something going with 2 outs and a walk says a lot. And, you know, proud of the way we played overall the homestand and especially this series.
So now, for the Jays, feeling pretty good about yourself as you go into this week. They are going to be off today, but they'll start a 2-game set with the Phillies. That'll be Tuesday and Wednesday. As I mentioned, only 15 games left. The Jays are 5.5 games back of the Yankees for the top spot in the American League East. And as far as the wild card standings go, Toronto... 0.5 game up on Tampa Bay and 2 games up on Seattle. Those are your 3 wildcard teams, Toronto, Tampa, and Seattle. Baltimore, 4 games out right now. It's 4 games back of the Mariners. The other race that we're watching in the American League, Cleveland and the Chicago White Sox for the top spot in the AL Central, which is going to be the 3rd seed in that wild card race. The White Sox are now 3.5 games back of Cleveland, despite going 7-3 in their last 10 games. Cleveland has gone 8-2 to keep them at an arm's length. We'll switch over to the CFL, where the Stampeders were playing at McMahon Saturday against the Lions. And honestly, this is a pretty messy game. There were flags constantly. There was some sloppy play early on. Felt like we didn't see a kickoff or a punt without a flag. The Lions did get off to a strong start. They opened up a 10-3 lead in the first half, but it was the Stampeders bouncing back. Jake Mayer hit Malik Henry on a 77-yard touchdown pass. But for the most part, the Stampeders' drives were short, and if they got it in scoring distance, they had to settle for field goals. 13-10, the Stampeders led at the half. Back and forth they went in the second half. Plenty of field goals. Antonio Pipkin would run in a 1-yard touchdown in the third to give BC a 20-13 lead in the fourth. It was Luther Hakunavanu to catch a pass from Jake Mayer with just a few minutes remaining to tie the game. That would send the game to overtime. Lions scored on their first possession. A James Butler 18-yard touchdown right up the middle, followed by a successful 2-point convert. The Stamps would score the touchdown through the air. Jalen Philpott caught a Jake Mayer pass for the touchdown, but they couldn't get the convert, and they fall 31-29 to the Rourke-less Lions. Stamps lose the season series to BC. Going to be much harder to get second place in the West now. Dave Dickinson gave his thoughts post-game.
I feel like we just basically, you know, kept giving them opportunities and with penalties. You know, we protected the ball and did some good things there, but, you know, we have the kick to win. We missed that as well. It's just some things that it was 48, 49 yards. Just certainly some things we just got to learn how to put the dagger in. Once you feel like you got it and it's your game, you got to put the dagger in.
Also, after the game, we don't really know what's going to come of it, but there was a punch on the field. Cam Judge punched Lucky Whitehead right in the mouth. This led to the Lions gathering out in the Stampeders parking lot after the game, essentially waiting for the players kind of near their vehicles where the families and the staff in the parking lot and all them go and gather. Nothing really came of it. A lot of yelling and pointing and yelling, but we'll see what the league does say about it later today.
I don't know that the league is going to say anything about it later today. Obviously, whenever they have to deal with any discipline, they have to get the CFLPA involved.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that process had not necessarily begun yesterday and is expected to begin today. So I don't necessarily know that we should be expecting an announcement from the league today. But there's going to be discipline coming out of this. Ultimately, like, the debate seems to be whether or not Cam Judge sucker punched him. He punched him. We know
I think
that.
It depends on how you define a sucker punch.
Yes.
But
he walked up to him and
now you're getting into semantics.
Exactly. So I don't know that we fully need to offer our opinion on that, but he definitely punched him. And if you punch a guy on the field after the game, realistically, you're probably getting suspended. And they'll probably be without Cam Judge for this weekend's game. There is likely also going to be, how the Lions coaches allowed their players to cross the parking lot and wait for Cam Judge outside the dressing room is absolutely beyond me.
What I'll say on this is we went down for our avails. We did our avails with the team. I don't know about you, but I had no idea that this had gone down on the field as the teams were leaving the field.
Completely unaware.
Now, the players and the coaches obviously had some sort of an inkling that something had happened, but they're not going to just bring it up. That's obvious. But as I'm leaving the dome, I'm walking from the gates to my vehicle, and I wander by a handful of Lions who are standing in a spot where I've never seen them hang out. They're kind of at the top of the hill between the south and the west lot. They're looking out over the lot, and I just went, this is weird. So I stuck around, and then they hung around, and then there was yelling and shouting, and everyone went home. But I will say, I agree. There were people of all rules that were down in there, and I was very surprised that it was not more of a push to get the Lions back to their bus and out of there.
Yeah, the teams are playing next week, right? So this is stuff that you can resolve on the field. I don't understand how, honestly, the coaching staff wouldn't have been aware of this and prevented their players from going.
And it was the tweet from Farhan Lalji who said that Rick Campbell was livid about it in his press conference. So he was obviously aware of it. So what was the message to the team after? I don't know.
It probably shouldn't be to go wait for Cam Judge in the
parking lot. Should be get on the bus and we'll go beat the brakes off him at home next week.
Yeah. But it's all pretty confusing. I think, there is video of what happened on the field. Now, that video, I don't know whether it will ever be released. I don't know anything of that, but that obviously complicates a little bit. The accusations about what Lucky Whitehead said are not great either.
And that's another thing we'll probably never find out, and is, for me, I think it's also pretty relevant. So,
yeah, and as I sort of wrote in the column that I wrote today, not one of these things does not justify the others,
no.
Right? You can't punch a guy in the face on the field. You can't.
No, violence is never the answer.
You can't say what Whitehead is accused of. Although I do think ultimately, punching, we have to separate those things, because saying, he shouldn't have said it almost sounds like I'm saying he deserves it, and I'm not saying that. But also, with all of that being true, my understanding from having spoken to several of the Stampeders players is sort of one of them walked out of the locker room, realized what was happening, and realized they were waiting for Judge explicitly. And went back in and got the rest of the stamps to make sure Judge didn't get beat. And that's unacceptable from the Lions.
Yeah.
This is professional sports. And so I don't know how the league deals with it. There's going to be a lot of discipline.
That was my biggest thing. I'm like, you're professionals. Get on your bus and go home.
That's how I feel. But it's just going to be a strange week. And I'll be perfectly honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going hiking. I'm getting picked up 15 minutes after the show ends. Which guarantees that there's going to be news while I'm out of cell phone service.
Those are the rules. Danny goes to the mountains and breaking news comes down the pipe.
I get one day off in 2.5 weeks. I came in here and I'm getting out of town and we know what's happening. So, great news.
Hey, maybe you're right. Maybe they'll do it like with the Player of the Week noms. Maybe they'll just probably.
Well, in general, just as a note, the CFL releases all of its discipline at one time.
Usually like, what, Wednesday or Thursday?
Normally
it's
Wednesday
later
or Thursday,
in the week.
And it's basically just a zero comment list. Here's what's happening. Players obviously have the right to appeal through the CFLPA. But what I'll be curious about is whether this has sort of permeated the national conversation. Let's be honest. If this happened in Saskatchewan, it would be all anyone in the CFL bubble is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I have both done pretty good jobs covering it.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I say that sincerely, but I have no idea. This may be something that the CFL needs to get ahead of and comment on early. But we may not hear anything until Wednesday, Thursday. They tend not to talk much about the disciplinary process.
Well, I did overhear a couple of individuals saying that, you know, Cam Judge had already been scooted up into the office and the league office was already involved, and that was when everyone was still in the parking lot after the game. So the question is, when are they going to speak, not if. Other scores from around the league. Elks beat the Rough Riders 26-24. It's a tough loss for Saskatchewan at home as well. The Ticats surprised the Bombers with a 48-31 win on Saturday, moving the Bombers to 12-2. Also an important win for Hamilton. They got four wins. Right now, Saskatchewan would cross over with their six wins, but they've also played one more game than the Tabbies and just also lost to Edmonton.
And have a head-to-head.
What?
They have a head-to-head between now and...
Oh, they have a head-to-head.
Yeah.
Ooh. So, oh.
And it is worth noting, the Riders need to win outright. Like, if they're tied in the standings, the crossover doesn't apply. They have to be ahead of them in the standings. So you begin to look at it, and I believe the Riders only have, what, four games left? I don't know.
They've played 14, and Hamilton's played 15. So they've got, what, so four games left from five to Hamilton.
Two against the Stamps, who, yes, have been inconsistent, but at this point you'd probably pick the Stamps to win. The Stamps only lose to the Lions and Bombers.
Mm-hmm.
They got one against the Ticats.
Yeah.
They got to make sure they get to seven wins, because the Ticats could be crawling up towards six for sure.
Yeah, and granted, you never really want to get into a crossover situation. It never is really great, but I think that if you're Saskatchewan and you're looking at what's going on ahead of you, especially with BC winning this last week, you're kind of saying, oh boy, options are getting kind of limited here. The buffet is...
Well, and Saskatchewan's hosting a great cup, so it's better than nothing. You want to at least give fans something to hope for, right?
It's a good point by you. So smart, Dan.
I'm good at this.
Other CPL action this weekend as Cavalry was off doing a little bit of... Football is life. Edmonton? They always lose to Cavalry. 1-0 the final score. How about this? Cavalry are 14-0 against Edmonton since the CPL was formed. It's a big win. Final road game of the season for Tommy Wilden Jr. and his side. Joe Mason scored in the 65th minute to propel the team to the win. Marco Carducci, another clean sheet. Three games left for Cavalry before the playoffs, and they're all at home. This one coming up this weekend is against Atletico Ottawa as well, who Cavalry are just 1 point behind for top of the table. So can you say a big match?
You got to win this one.
This is the one.
It's, well, I mean, the other thing to note is that Forge technically has one less game played. So Forge, it's still in their hands. But, I mean, this is top of the table. This is what you do it for.
Elsewhere, first tournament of the season for the new PGA calendar. Fortinet Championship went down at Silverado Resort and Spa in Napa, California. Weather wasn't great, but a wild finish to this one. How about this? Last year's tournament winner, Max Homa, chips out from 33 yards on the final hole. He shoots 4-under-66 in his final round. He didn't expect to win, though. Danny Willett held a one-stroke lead. He put his approach shot within 4 feet, and then he three-putted.
Oh, son of a ball, why didn't you just go home? That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Just brutal for Willett. That's a gift for Homa. He wins the Fortinet Championship in back-to-back years. Now on to the President's Cup, playing the top Americans against the international players from the tour. Two Canadians playing for the underdog internationals in Corey Connors and Taylor Pendrith. Canada advanced to the knockout stage at the Davis Cup, so that'll be coming up in November. They'll play Germany in the quarterfinals. And a quick shout-out to the Calgary Hitmen, who completed their preseason with a home-and-home sweep against the Oil Kings. They open their season this weekend with a home-and-home against Swift Current. In Speedy Creek Friday, their home opener is this Saturday night, 7 o'clock at the Saddle Dome. And that's it.
And good night, and good luck to you, sir.
That's the Morning Report, brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations. BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors. Quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast. We have to take a break. The Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline going to get a workout around the corner. Shai Davidi, one of our great Sportsnet writers for the Blue Jays, going to join us to talk about the weekend that was and 15 games left. What does it mean for Shai? We'll talk about that next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.